The kidnappers, though, is still unclear. The abduction of the Italians, along with two Iraqi colleagues, was claimed by several organisations, and the circumstances of their release remain a mystery. A Kuwaiti newspaper, which just days ago announced the impending release of the hostages, said a $1 million ransom had been paid. "We didn't give in to blackmail," was the only comment made by an Italian government spokesman. But the Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, has fueled speculation that money might have changed hands. He talked about tireless negotiations and a difficult decision. For many ordinary Italians transfixed by the drama of the two young women, the question of whether a ransom was paid doesn't seem to matter. Even Italy's political class, usually divided over the issue of Iraq, is for now united in relief and celebration. And now, handing over to my colleague Janat Jalil in London.
The British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has said he's encouraged by these latest hostage releases, but he's cautioned that the group holding the one British hostage in Iraq are not Iraqis, but an outside group, Tawhid and Jihad, with suspected links to Al-Qaeda. The group has already killed other hostages, including the two Americans it kidnapped at the same time as the Briton, Ken Bigley. But his family say their hopes have been raised by the recent flurry of hostage releases in Iraq. And a British Muslim delegation that's just returned from Iraq says it believes Mr. Bigley is still alive. His captors have been demanding the release of Iraqi women prisoners. The British government says it's trying to make contact with the hostage takers, but it's also said that it won't give in to blackmail. Now over to my colleague in Paris, Caroline Wyatt.
Here in France, the Foreign Ministry says it has no knowledge of any agreement reached to release the two French journalists held hostage in Iraq since the 20th of August. Late last night, a Frenchman in Baghdad called Philippe Brett told Al Arabiya TV that he had seen the two men and that they were in good health and would be released soon. He was described as a French negotiator, but officials in Paris said he was not part of any mission to secure the release of the hostages. He's believed to work for an organisation which promotes business links between France and Iraq. However, the liberation of the two Italian aid workers has raised spirits here, with the hope that France's own diplomatic efforts in the Middle East on behalf of the two French hostages will pay off soon. But officials and the media here are cautious about expressing any public optimism after earlier predictions of a rapid release proved false. Now, over to Caroline Hawley in Baghdad.
Even with the latest releases, there are still more than 30 foreign hostages being held in Iraq, and around 30 have been killed since the kidnapping of foreigners began in earnest back in April. There are many different groups now thought to be operating with a variety of motives. Some are criminal gangs who simply want ransoms. Others have made political demands, and it's believed that criminal groups sometimes kidnap foreigners to sell them on to other groups. But while it's the foreigners who grab headlines around the world, kidnapping remains a huge worry for Iraqis as well. No one has precise figures of the numbers who've been abducted, but doctors, academics, businessmen, anyone with money is at risk, as are their children. These kidnappings are done for ransom, and an American official has called them an immense problem.
That was Caroline Hawley in Baghdad, and we also heard from Tamsin Smith in Rome, Janet Jalil in London, and Caroline Wyatt in Paris.
This is WGDR Plainfield, Vermont. Goddard College's community radio station. We now begin our broadcast day. We operate at 91.1 FM with a power output of 920 watt, and our licensee is the Board of Trustees of Goddard College. Our studios and transmitter are located in the Elliott Pratt Center at Goddard College, and our mailing address is P.O. Box 336 in Plainfield, Vermont, 05667. WGDR is made possible by financial support from Goddard College and complimentary contributions from listeners, foundations, and underwriters. The following program presents the opinions of its participants and producers, and it does not reflect an official opinion of WGDR or its licensee, Goddard College.
One
Peter. I call myself a poet. The show, Spanning the Chasm, or Bridging the Schism, with a healthy spasm of skepticism. Behind me are the didgeridoos. This is the didgeridoo. And this only seems to be operating on one channel. Is the B flat didgeridoo. Odd though, it's not quite operating as it usually does. Let me give this channel a few flips. Nope. Nothing coming out on the right channel on that. However, the D is coming through. Okay, well, we're having a few equipment problems. It would seem. A few things are different in the studio, and so there's no phone connection. I believe we're not able to do that. And well, be the technical difficulties as they may, this is Peter, and I'm going to drop those didgeridoos into the background and proceed with the business of the day, which today will be science. And I'm going to start off with a relatively long article. An interesting one, though. It's called Life's Universal Scaling Laws. And this is from the September 2004 edition of Physics Today, which is a journal put out by the American Institute of Physics and can be reached on the internet at www.physicstoday.org. Although I don't know what's available. I've never been on that website. I receive Physics Today being a member of the Geophysical Union. And this is called Life's Universal Scaling Laws. A small abstract. Biological systems have evolved, branching networks that transport a variety of resources. We argue that common properties of these networks allow for a qualitative theory of structure, organization, and dynamics of living systems. This is an article by Jeffrey West, who is a senior fellow at the Los Alamos National Laboratory and a distinguished research professor at the Santa Fe Institute, both in New Mexico, and Jim Brown, who is a distinguished professor of biology from the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. I start. Nearly 100 years ago, the eminent biologist Darcy Thompson began his wonderful book On Growth and Form, Cambridge University Press, 1917, by quoting Immanuel Kant. The philosopher had observed that, quotation, chemistry was a science, small s science, but not a capital S science, for that the criterion of true, capital S, science lay in its relation to mathematics. Thompson then declared that since a mathematical chemistry now existed, chemistry was thereby elevated to a capital S science, whereas biology had remained qualitative, without mathematical foundations or principles, and so it was not yet a capital S science. That, of course, reeks with all kinds of masculine, patriarchal subdivision and categorization. Anyhow, let us proceed. Although few today would articulate Thompson's position so provocatively, the spirit of his characterization remains.